Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We're back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590. Fan Justin Cuthbert and Ailish this morning. And our insider brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet, NHL insider, co-host of 32 Thoughts, the podcast. Elliot, nice to hear from you again.
Nice to hear from you too, guys. Good luck with everything. Have a great run.
Oh, thanks so much. How's the 32 Thoughts, the tour been? A little worldwide travel for you guys, living in hotel rooms. How's that all going?
It's pretty funny. You get some great lines, like people sending you tweets like, you know, hope you're not suffering from jet lag on this trip, Elliot, and things like that. But look, there's two groups of people that matter here. Number one are the people that buy tickets, and number two are the people that sponsor the trip, and they seem pretty happy so far. So, you know, we're happy to do it then.
Best city you visited so far? They're all listening. Well, they want to know. Kitchener is on the edge of their seat.
Yeah, you know what, Ailish? I'm always partial. it's like picking which one is your favorite child, right? It's very, very hard. But whenever London's involved, I went to school there, so I might get fruit thrown at me tonight in Trenton, but I have to pick London.
I'm a Western guy too, Elliot, so I got to ask before we get to actual...
I always knew you were smart,
yeah,
Justin.
Yeah, you too.
You were smart. Yeah.
I got a little bone to pick, though. I mean, since it went to Western University, I was just like, I don't know. That's not... I feel like that was when not that I want to distance myself in any way, but I'm a University of Western Ontario guy, and I'm sure you feel the same way.
In terms of distancing myself, in terms of what?
The name. Like, I just didn't... The change to Western University, I take issue with.
Yeah, really? Yeah. You know what, Justin, I always say, don't sweat the small stuff. Like, that's not what... You got bigger fish to fry. You're a morning show host in Toronto. You don't have to worry about what Western does with its name. Look at it that way.
Yeah, you're probably right. And I think that's for everyone around the NHL, because there are always issues to discuss. And I want to talk about one NHL-specific issue off the top here, and that's the pressures on high-end players to depress their earning potential for the betterment of the team. Now, we talked about this yesterday. I'm getting the sense that there's a change in thinking, maybe brewing around this topic, and that you reported on the salary cap going up and one Austin Matthews preparing to sign a new deal. I feel like it's the perfect storm for star players to take a little bit more of the pie. Do you sense that that's a change that could happen here in the next couple of years?
Yes, I do. I think this generation is different. I think this generation is different in a lot of ways from previous generations. But I think when it comes to hockey, I think we're going to see that. I mean, you know, like, I think Connor McDavid is worth whatever salary he gets. Like, I think you could make a great argument he's underpaid now, even though he's making a ton of money. But when, you know, his contract negotiations were happening with Edmonton, one of the first things they did when they walked in, his agent is Jeff Jackson, was they said, look, we're not going to ask you for the full 20%. And the Oilers were like, thank God, because we would have had to do it, and we didn't think we could make the whole thing work. And, you know, Connor McDavid's not having any tag days, but he did take, you know, less than Edmonton was willing to give him. And it also, he initially agreed for a bigger chunk, and when that number got out, he said, you know what, on second thought, let's shave it a bit. And I think it was like by about $600,000 a year. And, the MacKinnon thing was really interesting, because MacKinnon made it very clear, he's a super competitive guy, that, you know, after hearing for years that it was the NHL's most underpaid player, that wasn't going to happen this time. And I think Colorado at the beginning had some difficulty wrapping its head around the fact that the number was going to be that high. They talked lower numbers. MacKinnon said no. And, you know, finally the Avalanche realized if we wanted to do this, this is where we were going to have to go. And I think that sent a message around the league. You know, I think the Matthews one is going to be fascinating. I'm on record as saying that I think unless, you know, the train really goes off the tracks, he's staying. Now, I'm not convinced he's going to sign for 8 years. As a matter of fact, I would be surprised if he did. But I think the number is going to be very big. And I do think that, Justin. I just think that this generation is going to be a bit of a change.
And for that reason, like, why you sign an 8-year contract is because you can get some years where the superstar is underpaid. And if Matthews decides, hey, I'm never going to be underpaid, that's just going to be something that the Leafs have to deal with. And another thing that they have to deal with is just the fact that they've had to sign their contracts at, like, the worst possible times. You mentioned Colorado. Well, they just got 8-year extensions done with their two prime guys before this rush of money comes in. Yes, it had an effect with Nathan MacKinnon. He signed for a big number, but it happened at a time where they're going to get 8 seasons and it's going to be fixed and the cap is going to increase during those seasons. With the Maple Leafs, I mean, they've signed their contracts at the worst time, after the McDavid boom and then before the pandemic, and now while this rush of money is coming in and entering the system. Does it just feel like the Maple Leafs are just a little unlucky when all these contracts come up and when they've had to sign deals? Because look at Colorado, it looks like he's really working in their favor.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what you could really do. I mean, they signed their contracts, and whatever anyone feels about the contracts, they signed at a time where business was going well and you could project the cap was going to go up, and then look what happened. It's just, I guess it proves my grandmother's old line, you plan, God laughs. So, that's all you can really say. I mean, their intentions were good. They had a good plan. What are you going to do? Sometimes life gets in the way. Not much you can do.
Elliot, let's shift over to Rasmus Sandin's situation. I know you were talking about this over the last couple of days as well, but after last night's game, seeing the more and more defensemen hitting the injury bug, you got forwards playing on the back end. Do you think that we're going to see a little bit of a expedited situation here? Or if the fit is still the problem, there's obviously an opportunity here. So are we going to see something a little bit different come out with this narrative around Sandin?
Well, I think that I know everybody was watching Aaron Judge last night, but the line I used during the broadcast is that Sandin is now asking for $11 billion. Like, he saw what was happening last night, and here we go. Look, I think that's time that this comes to an end. I think I really felt this was – they met face-to-face this week in New Jersey. They had a meeting. I don't think Dubas was there, but I think it was the agent and I believe Brandon Pridham representing the Maple Leafs. And I really thought that was going to lead to something getting done. I really thought it was going to happen this week. And I still think it should. I think the Maple Leafs have drawn a very hard line here, and they've done it from the beginning. They wanted him to sign a 2-year deal at the same number as Liljegren. And they said if it was a 1-year deal, it was going to be his qualifying offer, just like Travis Dermott did a couple of years ago. And they have not budged. They have taken a line and they have stuck to that line. I don't know if it's going to move at all in terms of all the injuries. It might. But I think Sandin needs to come in and play. So there's sometimes you have the leverage and there's other times the team has the leverage, and maybe it shifted a bit with all the injuries from last night and the injuries that they've had. But I think Rasmus Sandin also has to recognize that this is a huge season for him. And I understood his position at the beginning, that there were a lot of bodies there, and maybe he didn't like the way that the opportunity was shaping up in front of him. I can understand that. But now, the door is opening for him. The thing I would worry about if I was Liljegren is, you start the year hurt. You worry, do you ever catch up? Do you fall behind and not catch up? And I don't like that for him, but it's good for Sandin in terms of allowing him to play. Even though they don't necessarily have the same role, they just have to move bodies around. So, I look at this for Sandin. You got to get in there. You got to be ready for the start of the year. And then if you have a big year, the leverage shifts to you. And, he's probably going to have to accept a contract he doesn't really like. But I think sometimes you have to do that because you bet on yourself, and in the long run, you're better off. And I think that's the way he has to see it. I'm not a person who says team is always right. I'm not a person who says player is always right. I think at this point in time, I think Sandin has to realize the situation and look around and say, I got to get in there and take hold of things.
Any reason to read into sending Brandon Pridham? That seems like a message in itself, but I understand that Dubas has other things on his plate right now.
Well, like I said, I'm not 100% sure that he wasn't there, but Pridham is the lead negotiator on this one. So there's nothing to read into that.
Okay, Leafs, take a step backwards and look at the entire offseason. Was there anything that happened in Leafs world that surprised you potentially about how they went about their business, or even on the media day front of some of the comments about some individuals not having a contract in place and how they're kind of betting on themselves to make this their season?
Well, I was a little bit surprised that Dubas revealed the extent of his conversations with Shanahan. I'm not complaining about it. I think it was good for media, but I was just surprised at how much detail he went into. I'm not surprised he believes in himself. It's kind of like what we're talking about with Sandin here. So at some point in time, you've got to believe that you're capable of doing the job. I did wonder if Dubas was going to take a bigger swing on the trade front. It didn't happen, but I'm sure he looked around. When it comes to the goaltending, I know he tried hard after Fleury. I know he tried hard after Ville Husso. And then, you know, when you strike out in your first two attempts, not for lack of trying, you know, all of a sudden you got to figure out, okay, what's the next best option? And, you know, we all know what he came up with. I think that, I think the thing that would just surprise me the most is that I'm not surprised he bet on the group he's got. He's always believed that this group could win, and I really felt that he was going to, you know, if you're going to go down, you got to go down your way, and he does believe in this team. I think I was just surprised by the fact that he went as deep as he did into the conversations he had.
Another thing we learned at Media Day, or at least were led to believe, is that John Tavares' injury in the Montreal series didn't really have a major, major impact on his summer, and he was able to adequately prepare for last year. And now fast forward to now, he's in a position where he might not be able to adequately prepare for this season because he's out for the next 3 weeks, at least, with an oblique strain.
Yeah.
How many alarms does this set off? Do you think this is a big deal, a small deal, a minor hiccup? Where do you think, does this change the situation for Toronto and Tavares more specifically?
Well, you know, David Amber was making the point last night, you know, there's a lot of people getting hurt this year. And some of them are flukes, like I think it was Kaprizov in Minnesota that was hit with a shot. And, you know, what are you going to do? But also, you know, I was watching, you know, Ben last night. His groin injury was kind of out of nowhere. And, you know, Tavares gets an oblique injury, and there's a few of those going around. I we were kind of talking about it, and you're wondering, is there some way that guys are preparing or the camps are going with all these hard skates that, you know, people are getting hurt? And, you know, I don't know the answer to that, but I can't help but wonder the answer to that. You know, I think this is a really difficult time. I remember last year when Hughes and Pettersson were not signed and they showed up a bit late. You know, I said, it's not really a big deal. Guys keep themselves in shape now, and they'll be ready. And, you know, Quinn Hughes himself kind of disagreed with that a bit. He said, you know, even if you don't want to, even if you keep yourself in shape, there's something missing when you're not at camp with your teammates and you're not, you know, in the group getting ready with the rest of the group. And I think there are players who believe that if you don't start the season on time, it's very, very difficult to catch up. And that's kind of the thing I look at here. How's this going to work out for some of the, that's why I'm a little worried about Liljegren. Mm-hmm. And I would say the same thing about Tavares. I said this at the end of last season, and I do think that this is something that Toronto has to look at. I still think Tavares is an extremely good player, but I do think they're going to have to look at him, using him a little bit differently. Just maybe more on the wing or roles where he doesn't have to cover as much ice. And, you know, you just hope that the injury doesn't make that challenge even greater.
Right now with him sidelined, who are you seeing maybe as a viable option to fill that space now, but maybe even earn themselves a role permanently on that second line, which obviously has some question marks, who's going to play with him and Willie, and if they actually go forward with that pairing for the rest of the season?
Well, you know, now that Yarncroak and Kerfoot are playing defense, it opens up even more opportunities for people. Well, look, I think one guy was last night, and that was Robertson. You know, that's a guy, you know, Anthony mentioned him right before the game. You know, this is a guy who, you know, I think the organization hopes for a lot from. And, you know, the number one thing that Robertson has to do is he has to score. And he scored last night. And that's a good sign. So I think it's a huge opportunity for a guy like Robertson. I also think it's a big opportunity. You know, Adam Gaudette, when they signed him, I thought they signed him as like a fourth line center, to be honest. And what they told him, they didn't promise him anything, but they told him that there was an opportunity to play high here, that maybe he could play with one of the top lines if he showed well. So, you know, considering he was told that and he was given that opportunity early on in the first exhibition game he played, I think that's another guy that this could be a real opportunity for.
Elliot, I want to bounce around the league a little bit while we have you, and I want to begin with the Ottawa Senators. I wonder how their offseason, which was nothing if not aggressive, has grown on you, if at all. I mean, they spent a lot of money on players that maybe haven't earned the exact AAV that they're going to be enjoying immediately. But when you look at your reporting this week and where the salary cap could be going and where the league financial situation is, it seems like this could work out wonderfully for Pierre Dorion. How would you grade the Ottawa offseason now that we have a little clearer picture of where the league's salary dynamic is going?
Well, I think sometimes you have to look at things like not simply from a roster point of view. Sometimes you have to look at things and say, why is somebody doing this? And when I look at Ottawa, this was not only about building a team. This was also about a team rebuilding the trust and faith the community has in itself. Like the Ottawa Senators, they are trying to rebuild their relationship with the community. This was a community of hockey fans that were not happy with the organization, were tired of the way things were going, and now. You know, someone in the off season, someone recently compared it to after, you know, Bill Wirtz passed away in Chicago. They just said, okay, there was a chance to do something new and the Blackhawks did it. And that's what the Senators have had a chance to do and they're doing it. And I think that you have to look at it, Justin, in that sort of prism in addition to, you know, the way it looks for the roster. You know, I believe if you have great players that you really believe in and that you think that they can handle the pressure of a big contract early, then you lock them up for as long as you can. Because if Brady Tkachuk continues to be what we think Brady Tkachuk will be, and if Tim Stützle turns into what we think Tim Stützle will be, and same for Josh Norris, those contracts aren't going to be going down. They're going to go up. And they have a chance, it's always a gamble, but they have a chance to have contracts that are great value. And I think that's the way you have to go, and that's the way you have to believe, and I understand what Ottawa did.
Certainly makes for the Battle of Ontario a bit more exciting for the first time in a while for Toronto Maple Leafs fans as well. So, Elliot, I know Patrick Kane was a conversation piece all summer long, and now he's actively back in camp, and I'm wondering if there's any more information or feeling around how this season's going to shake out for Patrick Kane and the Chicago Blackhawks?
Well, I simply believe that Kane and Taves, they're going to wait a little bit this year to see who's good. And, you know, like when the rumors were going around this summer and definitely there was interest in Kane from teams like Edmonton who poked into it. But I think what Kane and Taves told people is, let's just make sure who's good this year. You know, if you make a trade during the summer, you don't necessarily know how the season's going to go. But if you wait and see who's off to a good start, and Kane in particular is a guy who watches a lot of hockey, he can see what's out there, then I think they'll make their decision in a few months.
I wonder what you make about the situation in Boston. I mean, they brought the band back together this summer, but a bit patchwork to start with Marchand and McAvoy dealing with injuries. We got Bergeron in his final ride here, and we've got the specter of David Pastrnak's contract negotiations looming. Can they make this work? Can they put this all together for one last attempt at a Stanley Cup or a long playoff run? And what do you see as a realistic outcome of the David Pastrnak situation now that he's eligible to sign a contract and hasn't come to terms on anything yet?
I am optimistic for the Bruins and Pastrnak. One of the things I mentioned on the podcast this week is some players say, you know what, I'm not going to negotiate once the season starts. I'm under the impression that Pastrnak is not putting any deadline down. I don't think he's worried about it. To me, that's a good sign. I've heard reason to believe that the Bruins and Pastrnak are optimistic about getting something done. So I choose to go look at it through that way. The one thing is I never underestimate that group, like the Bergeron, Marchand led Bruins. And, I'm a huge McAvoy guy too, but those guys have created, a culture where they always compete their hardest. They're welcoming without to their young players, but they also have great expectations for them. And I just think it's a really smart, high IQ, unselfish team, and you underestimate them at your peril. I'm really curious to see how Krejci's going to look this year. He had a year off. Sometimes that can be a great thing. Sometimes that can be the worst thing. But I think you'd be dumb to underestimate those guys.
Last name for you, Elliot. Ryan O'Reilly doesn't have a deal in St. Louis. A name we don't hear that much about, but an interesting one. Do you know what the situation is with O'Reilly and the Blues? And are you surprised at all that a deal isn't done there?
A little. I think the Blues decided that they would deal with their youth first, that, Thomas was their number one priority and Kyrou was their second. And I think they plan to get to O'Reilly and we'll see where it goes. I mean, Kadri's contract got it going. And guys, I just got a text message. I have to run. Okay.
No problem, Elliot.
I'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Appreciate you joining us. Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, co-host of 32,000 Podcast. Probably about to break some news.
I mean, so I feel like we actually had an Elliot interview, like legit, because that's what happens with an Elliot interview. He runs off to do something more important. I love it.
God,
at least it happened.
Get
at the
on
end.
His Twitter feed right now. It's spicy. All right. So that insider brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. I was just about to say, 32 Thoughts, the tour tonight in Trenton at the Boston Pizza, the BP. You can still buy tickets. I checked it out online. You can go to 32tour.com for a couple limited tickets to the Trenton showing at the BP.
If I was
it's a
free,
hot spot in Trenton.
If I was free, I'd do that for effect. Like, I'm done at reaching the end of every interview. Like, yeah, let's. I got something here.
He's like, oh yeah.
And then you're all over his Twitter all day because you know something's going on today. So
that's really smart.
I love it.
I love it. Elliot, always full of the best stuff for us. The Ryan O'Reilly stuff, interesting. UFA. Eh?
Yeah, not much noise around him. The Patrick Kane thing, though, it's like it is my favorite storyline right now in the NHL. I feel like it's just wherever he goes, it's going to be interesting. Like I was admittedly a little disappointed with Marc-Andre Fleury going to Minnesota. I wanted to see him, great team. I wanted to see him in a big spot though. I want to see these guys who go from one franchise to another in an effort to win at the end of their careers. I want it to be newsworthy. And I think Kane is going to pursue that. I think if he's going to go anywhere, it's going to go to a team that's going to win. It's going to go to a talented core where maybe he doesn't have to be the guy.
Toronto connection, because he's a New York guy, wants to be in the limelight, wants to go to a team where he could help write that narrative that he brought a cup to Toronto.
You don't think Patrick Kane would want to play with Auston Matthews?
100%.
How about fixing the second line dynamic by bumping Mitch Marner out of the top line? Not a slight in any means, no. Because you're using him to prop up John Tavares a little bit, make sure that John Tavares is at his best. I mean, where did he have his most success as a Maple Leaf? On a line with Mitch Marner. that would be amazing. It seems like a pipe dream, but you never know what's going to happen with injuries and so on and so forth. So it could be an option. Edmonton would be unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Could you imagine that? Greatest player in the world, maybe the greatest distributor in the world, maybe the two best distributors in the world with Patrick Kane and Leon Draisaitl. Can you imagine the passing displays on every night in Edmonton if Pat Kane landed there? I think it's more viable in Edmonton than anywhere, but I just hope Patrick Kane wants to go somewhere, mm-hmm. wants to go somewhere where he can compete for a Stanley Cup, wants to go somewhere where he doesn't have to be the guy and he can just fit in and just take a team to the next level. I think it's the story of the NHL season.
Wow. And if you feel confident about that, maybe you play some futures on some of these teams like Edmonton, like Maple Leafs, or some of the other aforementioned teams where you think that Patrick Kane might land, because your odds might be good now without this happening. And then maybe by trade deadline, you're looking at a pretty penny. We could set that all up for you next in the Waken Rake that's brought to you by Unibet. Crazy about the odds with special guest Anthony Bruno from Sportsnet Bets. That's next on the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Wake up!
Now it's time for Wake and Rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of accuracy.
Show me the money!
With Ailish and Justin.
It's time for the world-renowned Wake and Rake, brought to you by Unibet. Crazy about the odds, crazy about winning. That's us, as of late, with our new anchor debut. Damn, it's been pretty good. The people's picks, they've been listening all year long. They've been taking tips, and now they're just ready to fit in seamlessly, right?
Yeah, we're taking credit for even the anchor picks now. Now there's real buzz. People are talking about the anchored Wake and Rake. And of course, we've had some great success. We've hit our quota for the week, but we're gonna get greedy here. We're getting so greedy that we're adding a fourth leg today. So yeah, things are on the up and up here for the Wake and Rake.
Okay, so yesterday's Wake and Rake hits, featuring special guest parlay piece, People's Choice, Cody in St. Kitts.
Mm-hmm.
He's already texted in another pick for today. He's hungry for back-to-back wins. We do have a lengthy list of submissions for the Wake and Rake today. But as Justin mentioned, we're going to have a fourth member of the team joining us right now, Anthony Bruno from Sportsnet Bets. How's it going, Anthony?
Pretty good, guys. Thank you so much for having me on. Before we get started, I just want to say one thing. Thank God Aaron Judge finally hit a home run last night, because I have been betting on this guy to hit a home run for the last like four or five games, just lighting my money on fire, and it finally hit last night.
Did you even break
even? And I couldn't miss out on history. Same thing with like half of the SN Bets team. Mm-hmm. We were betting on this thing every night. So thank goodness that finally hit.
I feel you. Did your winnings last night break even for missing it four or five times?
Yeah, we're about even. Let's call it even, guys.
That's fun. I like that a lot. What do you think of the fan who fumbled the bag there?
Oh my God, that was a disaster. When I first saw it in real time, I was like, okay, you know, that's a tough play to make. But when you see the slow-mo replay of that like side camera and the ball hitting his glove and bouncing into the bullpen, just absolute devastation. I don't know how this guy's going to sleep, honestly.
He has to move out of Canada, I think.
Oh, it's a complete nightmare. I mean, I can't even imagine being in that situation. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, the 61 ball in your glove, and you don't make the play. It's just a complete disaster.
I love how he like wants to be, like he doesn't want to bring attention to it, but that just, when you don't want attention, you get attention. So people are going to be knocking on his door. They're going to figure out who this is. People are going to be hunting down that interview, and he's going to have to eventually talk about it, it seems. You can only make it worse.
Yeah, and that's
sometimes.
The thing, right? You can't hide from it. I mean, this is now attached to him for the rest of his life, unfortunately. But I mean, listen, I feel bad for the guy. I hope he finally gets over it. And you know what? Let's say this. It wasn't as easy as it looks. Like, I think a lot of us are like, oh, I would have made that catch, no problem. But in the moment, you have all those people around you. You got to reach down over the railing. It was a tough play.
We had John Morosi on in the 7 o'clock hour, and he said that was actually the hardest hit home run of Aaron Judge's season. So he was really, like, helping validate the, this guy tried his best. Yeah, John Morosi is a much better person than us because we started the show by, you know, poking fun at it. But just for context for listeners, you're right. It wasn't as easy as it looked, but hope that guy and his buddy what's his name? Lasagna.
Frankie Lasagna.
Frankie Lasagna are doing well this morning with all the attention. Okay, so Anthony, this is how it works. Hopefully you're a loyal listener of the Wake and Rake, but we're going to do a two-leg parlay in the room. We're going to add you in as the three-leg parlay, and then we add in a listener submission now for the anchor of our four-leg parlay. Today's game, big one tonight, is obviously Thursday Night Football. Got Dolphins and Bengals, but then there are a couple other sprinkle MLB games if you're interested, but I'm assuming you're probably going big on Thursday Night Football. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm all over this Thursday Night Football game. I mean, football is my favorite sport to bet on, period. So we got a pretty interesting game tonight, and I'm excited to hopefully hit this Wake and Rake parlay, guys. I don't want to let you guys down.
No, don't worry. We're only two wins, one loss this week. No pressure at all. The people are talking. It's trending on Twitter. No pressure at all. Okay, so how are you feeling? Just like your lean on tonight, Dolphins-Bengals. You know, Dolphins have looked red hot. Bengals turning the corner here. What's your initial look when you're looking at the lines?
Yeah, so just looking at this game, I really like this spot for the Bengals, guys. Right now, 3.5-point favorites at home. Looking at the Dolphins, I know they're 3-0 this season, and they're 3-0 against the spread, but I don't think they're quite as good as their record indicates, just looking back at their first three games, right? So game one against the Patriots at home, they beat them 20-7. This Patriots team can't score points. Then in week two, they were getting blown out against the Ravens, made a miraculous comeback on the road, 21-point comeback. Tua looked awesome at the end of that game. Kudos to them for that comeback. But then last week against the Bills, they got outplayed. The Bills ran 86 plays to the Dolphins, 37 plays last week. And we all know what happened at the end of the game. The Bills run out of time. Ken Dorsey in the booth losing his you-know-what. Josh Allen being consoled by Tua on the field. It was just unbelievable. So this Dolphins team, I don't think they're quite as good as their record indicates. And now short week on the road in Cincinnati against a team that finally looked like they got things right last week. Joe Burrow threw for 275 yards, 3 touchdowns. The offensive line looked a lot better, only giving up 2 sacks after giving up 13 sacks of the first 2 weeks. So I like this spot for the Bengals at home tonight.
There's a little bit of money coming in on the Dolphins. That's probably because we're just a little clarification, although it hasn't been, you know, full out announced that Tua Tagovailoa will play. You know, he was a little banged up in that Buffalo game. I think everyone's a little banged up and a little bit exhausted after what was, you know, pretty extreme temperatures. I worry about that a little bit with Miami too, that they're coming on a short week in which the conditions in a tough game were so extreme. So I think that is something to watch. I'm a little conflicted on the side, though. I think the number is pretty much right. Like, I don't know if the Bengals can win by margin, but I do think there's a chance that Cincinnati can put its best foot forward. What about the total? It's at 47.5 right now. It's generally been under season so far. Through 3 weeks, I think it's like 70% unders that have been hitting.
Yeah, there's been a lot of boring games.
A lot of boring games, and, you know, a couple have stood out, but only a couple teams really stand out. Like, Detroit's hitting overs, Philly's hitting overs, but other than that, you can't really rely on anyone. The Dolphins, though, have been one of those teams that's been hitting overs. Do you think this one can cover the total?
I'm also leaning to the over in this game, guys, and you mentioned Tua Tagovailoa. He is expected to play tonight. He's dealing with a back and ankle issue, and I think it's going to hinge a lot on his health and how he looks, because if Teddy Bridgewater comes into this game, my goodness, I don't know how that Dolphins offense is going to operate with Teddy Bridgewater, but right now I would lean to the over. This Dolphins team, guys, has allowed a combined 718 passing yards and 5 touchdowns over the last 2 games to Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. So I think the Bengals at home are going to be able to throw the ball and put up points. We all know how explosive the Dolphins are with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle and the running backs that they have, Chase Edmonds and Raheem Mostert. So I'm kind of leaning towards the over in this spot.
Okay, I love it. I think you're in alignment with that, at least. We might have different perspectives on who's going to be victorious tonight, but let's start with this, Anthony. You're in the hot seat. We're asking for your Wake and Rake pick to start, because you're going to help us decide who we're taking the submission from, and then the rest of us here in the room have a couple backup options. So you're beginning the parlay. What's your best bet for tonight?
Oh, my goodness.
No
Lots
pressure.
Of pressure. All right. So I took a look at something last night, guys. I was looking at what slot receivers have done against Miami this season. So I go back to week one, Jacoby Myers of the Patriots, 4 catches, 55 yards on 6 targets. Week two, Mark Andrews, who is essentially a slot receiver. I know he's a tight end. 9 catches, 104 yards on 11 targets. Devin Duvernay, who also plays in the slot, had 42 yards. And then last week, Bills receiver Isaiah McKenzie, 7 catches, 76 yards and a touchdown on 9 targets. Who plays the slot for the Cincinnati Bengals? That would be Tyler Boyd. And I know he doesn't get as much attention as Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. Those guys are awesome. But Boyd is pretty good himself. And right now, his receiving yards total is set at 40.5. So I like Tyler Boyd to go over 40.5 receiving yards tonight.
I love it. Mm-hmm. I love the analysis. It's probably better than you're going to get from either Ailish and I or I here. So that, I love it.
Locked it in.
Let's lock that in as the first leg for the Wake and Rake. And now, as Ailish mentioned, let's go through some of the listener submissions because we got to get that anchor in place before we complete the parlay. So the first one I'm seeing here, Ja'Marr Chase over receiving yards. We don't have to break these down too much. He says, it's Jay from Brampton. He also says, or even at any time TD. I'm actually feeling Ja'Marr Chase myself on the over. I think even if Miami gets to the point where, if Miami jumps in front of this game, I still think Joe Burrow is going to have a lot of opportunity to throw down the field, either in chase mode or to put them or put the Bengals in a position to be leading the game. So Ja'Marr Chase, I think, is going to have his opportunities. I'm interested in that, but I might be interested for my own selfish reasons. The next one, and I'll turn it over to you, Ailish, after this one, is just Waddle first TD score. I think that's okay as a standalone, but probably not a parlay piece.
Yeah, that's Matt in Toronto. I like that as well. I'm going to have some player props a little bit later, but don't know if we're going to put that in the parlay. Chad from Peterborough, who's a seasoned vet in terms of betting on this show, and definitely going to sprinkle on Eli Apple over over receptions at plus 730. But my best bet is Sam Hubbard over sacks at plus 170.
Bruno, you got to lean on that one over 0.5 sacks, Sam Hubbard.
I like it. Let's roll, guys. Let's roll.
So he's got a couple player props as well. That's Chad from Peterborough. Waddle anytime touchdown. Steve from Kitchener. Then a little bit of sprinkle here. Eric in Hamilton. Wake and Rake anchor pick. Anytime touchdown in the Bengals-Dolphins game tonight. Either Jalen Waddle or Tyreek Hill. Both coming in at plus money right now. Justin Cuthbert, this is written by you, I think.
No, you got it might be because I've been pounding the drum for these guys since I started here. But you got to pick one. If it's going to be the Wake and Rake submission, you got to pick one or the other. So I think we got to move on.
Okay, let's read one or two more here, and then we'll decide. Burrow over 11.5 rushing yards. That's Chris in Moncton.
Bruno, got anything there?
I don't know if I love that. I think I like some of the other plays brought up before that. I kind of, you know what, guys, I like anything, honestly, surrounding Ja'Marr Chase tonight because he's been quiet the last two games, just 54 and 29 receiving yards over the last couple games. I know he caught a touchdown last week, but it almost feels like this guy is going to explode at some point. He had a big week one, and that Ja'Marr Chase explosion game is coming. I don't know if it's this week or the next week, but it's coming. I'm feeling it.
Okay, sounds like we're all on board with Jay from Brampton. Ja'Marr Chase over receiving yards. Feel good about locking that one in?
I'm willing to do that, but just one more because Boston, Baltimore is obviously big for our listenership. Nathan Eovaldi over 4.5 Ks versus Baltimore. Last time versus the Orioles, he threw 9 innings, according to Cody from St. Catharines, who's our guy yesterday.
He's our winner.
But again, that's our rule. That's we don't go tough. Back to the well. We don't want to discourage you, Cody, from sending in submissions because we'll go back to you. Don't
bet
worry.
That one personally.
But bet that one personally because Cody is going to stay hot. So let's lock in the listener submission and the anchor, Ja'Marr Chase over receiving yards. Now, that's the way I was going to go, so I'm going to pivot here. But while I do that, Ailish, you give your pick.
Okay, so that's Jay from Brampton, who's going to be our anchor for the Wake and Rake. I'm going to go with Tyreek Hill tonight. Feeling a big Tyreek Hill game. I think he's going to be specifically and particularly more motivated because he lost twice to the Bengals last season when he was on the Chiefs, stopped shy of the goal line by Bengals corner Eli Apple in that crucial play in the AFC title game. I think he's got a lot to prove, so I'm going to go his over in rushing yards. Is it rushing? No, receiving yards? What did I have up here? Receiving yards. That's at, oh my God, the line's moved. Oh no, 73.5. So Tyreek Hill over receiving yards. I'm locking that in as my wake and rake pick. I like the narrative, and I think that he's one of your guys, Justin.
Okay, so we got Chase, we got Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Bruno, what was your pick again?
Tyler Boyd. Over 40.5 receiving.
So
yards.
We're banking on the ball being thrown around a lot. I'm gonna go a little bit conservative here. We picked three receivers to go over the receiving yard totals. That's likely gonna result in points. I don't want to just take the total as it stands now because I'm a little concerned about how this trend of unders keeps hitting. So I'm gonna tease it down to as far as I can go, and our rule is -200. So can I get that down to about over 44.5 within the rules, and then we can sort of give ourselves a little bit of grace because this is a four-leg parlay after all.
You can get over 44. The lowest that you can get in terms of odds, you can do over 43.5 at -200. You're good with that?
Let's do that. So over 43.5 and overs, Tyler Boyd, Jamar Chase, and Tyreek Hill. Sound good?
Bruno, you in?
Love it. I love that, guys. And especially Tyreek Hill, just like I was saying about Jamar Chase. He's coming off a quiet week three, and it just feels like that guy can go off at any moment. So I really like the Tyreek Hill prop as well.
I love it. My just $5 of the day, which is something I throw in every day, is a two-touchdown game for Tyreek Hill, +750. Just a little sprinkle. It's a little sprinkle. Just $5. That will be mine for the day. Bruno, we'll let you go now. We'll wrap everything up here on our end. Appreciate you joining the Wake and Rake, which is a +700 four-leg parlay today on Unibet. Also, Mike from Sportsnet Bets just texted in, Mixon anytime touchdown. Big Sportsnet Bets day today.
All right. Thanks a lot for having me on, guys. Hopefully this thing hits. I don't want to let you guys down.
Nah,
let's stay hot.
You won't. Thanks, Bruno. There's Anthony Bruno from Sportsnet Bets. All right.
A lot of moving parts, but I think we survived that. A lot of moving parts.
Okay, so let's just run it down.
I think we got a good parlay. This is a high scoring game with a lot with Tua and Joey Burrow going off, which is a distinct possibility, I think we can cash this one.
Tyler Boyd over, Tyreek Hill over, Jamar Chase over, and then the over 43.5 tees down, +700 on Unibet. Rob from downtown says, all over, what a bunch of clowns. Rob from downtown. I hope you're wrong, Rob.
Hey, you know, it might be square. We might be chalky, but that is what it is.
That's the bet.
We cheer.
You ride or
we,
you don't,
we don't
Rob.
Cheer for unders. Unders may...
Boring.
May continue to hit, but they're not fun to cheer for. So let's cheer for some overs. Let's hope that the trend is not going to continue.
Jay,
now, you...
Oh, go ahead. I was going to say, Jay from Brampton is our anchor, just so everybody knows. Jay, Brampton.
Jay from Brampton. Okay, so you've given up your... Just $5.
That's right.
I'm going to give my same game parlay for Thursday night football. Now, I don't know if we were in agreement there on Cincinnati, but I think there's a possibility that Miami's just elite and they just prove that tonight. So my same game parlay, the theme is that just Miami explodes, dominates, and they're just, you know, not on the tier of Buffalo, but a legit team in the AFC and some team that needs to be reckoned with. So I'm going to take Miami on the money line. Chase Edmonds over 50.5 total rushing and receiving. I teased down the total here as well to 42.5. I guess that's past the -200, but whatever.
Well, it doesn't count. That's wake and rake rules. This is your own same-game parlay.
This is my own thing.
Do as you please.
I'm going to go Tyreek Hill over 71.5 receiving yards and Mike Gesicki over 20.5 receiving yards. So it's just basically a big Tua day. He's going to find all of his...
Hopefully he plays with all of this riding on Tua, huh?
Well, yeah. I mean, and it won't be... Unfortunately, it won't be voided if Tua doesn't play. But I the line movement is going towards Miami, which tells you that he's probably going to play. And he's like doing interviews with the TNF crew. Like, he's not doing those if he's not playing. So I feel like it's just, you know... They're just going through the protocol right now. Of course, he dealt with some injuries last week, and for that reason, he's on the injury list. But all signs point to him playing. So I think he finds everybody but Waddle, which is a little interesting. I just thought the Waddle number was a little bit extreme. Hill, Gesicki, Chase Edmonds, rushing and receiving. Those are all overs. Who is our guy chirping the overs? Well, I got more overs.
Rob from downtown.
Sorry, Rob from downtown. But the Miami Dolphins on the money line is where that money comes from, because they were plus 70 when I put this in. They're down to plus 155. So a little money coming in on Miami. I'm still believing that this is a distinct possibility. So I'll take the plus 1600 on this and see if we can hit another same game parlay too.
Side interest for Blue Jays fans tonight is that the Orioles and the Red Sox are playing actually a 1:30 p.m. game. If the Red Sox win, the Blue Jays clinch the playoffs. Anticlimactic in a sense, because there won't be any Blue Jays baseball tonight and you won't get to see the on-field celebrations. But put a little bit of money on the Red Sox minus 162 favorites on the money line to
now,
close
now
up
the series.
Now, is that
what you want to cheer for?
Well, that's a good discussion point. Do you want them to clinch on social media, everybody watching and saying, oh, yeah, nice, and they throw out a tweet? Or do you want them to win tomorrow night against the Boston Red Sox at home to clinch the playoffs?
I actually think it would be close to a happiness hedge spot if you want to see them actually organically celebrate going to the playoffs and winning a wild card spot. But at minus 162 for the Red Sox, like, I just can't get involved.
Like
if you want to see it, I can't pay that price. And if you don't want to see it, like, either way, it seems like it's not a good way to play this. If you want to enjoy it, if you want to have money on the Blue Jays getting into the playoffs and enjoying that moment for yourself, I think just hoping Baltimore wins and then betting on the Blue Jays this weekend would be the better bet.
Well, tonight, no Blue Jays baseball, back in action for their final home stand against the Red Sox starting tomorrow. It's Baby Friday today. That was Justin and Ailish for the Fan Morning Show. Good luck with the Wake and Rake presented by Unibet. Hopefully we can nail another one and send you into Friday and your weekend with a little bit extra change. That was the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.